All done, John?
Yeah.
Thanks much for joining us today. I appreciate it a lot.
Yeah, I'd love to hear what everybody's got to say. We've all got so many varied opinions.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's a lot of fun to do the shows, that's for sure.
Barrel.
Oh, oil, that's Greg you're listening to.
Or $5 corn, or the government pulling the subsidy. That's probably the main thing is big concern is, and I don't think that's there right now.
Well, the Andersons, of course, are looking at putting an ethanol plant up here in Champaign County. But I got to look at an ethanol map for the state. Oh, my Lord. If you send me an email, I'll email the map to you. It's pretty thick. The Illinois Corn Growers put it out, and it's just phenomenal. It looks. Have you seen maps of Iowa with all the dots around it?
I take the ethanol magazine. It's pretty impressive.
Oh, it's really impressive. Unbelievable that many places might be going up. And you just have to be fearful that, I guess I am historically, that ethanol's failed to a lot of times, 5 times, I think, since the 1850s, and failed pretty miserably a couple or two or three times. The first time the government made it fail, apparently it was used in the Civil War, about that era. Everybody used it for almost everything, and they put, and I had to read this a couple of times, I think it was a $2 a gallon tax on it, and just killed. They were trying to finance the war, I think, and they just killed it.
that's pretty much a kill shot.
Yeah, I know. It was a dollar or $2. I'd have to go back and look at what it was, but it was just an unbearable amount. It was really terrible. And it killed it at that point, and then it came back in World War I and World War II, and at that point oil was cheap. And that killed it. And then I did not recall this in the 80s. There were a bunch of little plants in like 10 million gallons.
Yeah.
And they all got started, and I forget how many of them, but there were a lot of them, like 70 or 80 or more than that maybe. And they all came up 1 year, and they all disappeared the following year.
Well, you know what interests me is all these ethanol plants, the owners have not much experience in risk management. And I wonder how much of this enormous up so fast is due to the panic on the ethanol boys, because they didn't know what they were, open a plant. What do they know about hedging?
Yeah, well, but the thing about that is that if you read the contract for the plants that farmers own, and I think most of them that are up or plan to be breaking ground are farmer-owned, is that those corn contracts, when you buy into that as a farmer, you buy in to deliver corn to.
Yep.
And not only that, but when the price of corn goes against the plant or higher, you still have to deliver the corn to the – you could be called upon to deliver corn to the plant at a lower level, and I forget what it was. But now they will pay you back for the difference afterwards, but you're still required to deliver the corn to them.
But we don't know how all this is really going to shake out. Remember,
yeah.
The deferred – what was it? The things that hedged the rye.
What I can see is the guys going, yeah, screw you. I'm not delivering corn to you for $2. I'm delivering it for $5 over here.
Yeah. I mean, this is just wild stuff. And, gosh, think of just a minuscule drop in yields off of the demand base you got is crazy what it does to the market.
Yeah, unbelievable.
I mean, we got no carryover. I mean, thought of a sub-billion bushel carryover and using 12 billion and people thinking, gee, that's enough. I think they got to have 1.5 billion bushels just to have a pipeline.
Yeah.
I mean, I think 1 billion bushels warrants $4 corn just by itself, just by the very fact that if you got a billion bushels a month you're using and the carryover is 1 billion bushels, somebody's out of corn because it just doesn't fit that way.
Yeah.
Some of it's going to export, some of it's going to feed mills, some of it's going to ethanol, and somebody else just didn't do it right, and he's out. And when he's out, he pays anything to get it. So I just think it's going to be the wildest thing I've ever seen.
Well, what's the possibility China decides that they need to up their corn acreage and they do it, and that rather, and I know Ukraine put wheat in the ground, but we often put wheat in the ground and rip it up and put corn in if the prices aren't right.
Mm-hmm.
What's the possibility that they decide to really plant corn there? I was there this summer, and man, there's a lot. You know, there were a lot of corn. There was a lot of corn out to begin with,
mm-hmm.
and there, you know, everybody and their dog has a demonstration plot over there.
And I hear I was reading something on Ag Resources the other day talking about they're still not on hybrid varieties. And gosh, I know what.
Yeah, they are now.
They're getting there.
they're getting there, trust me.
Yeah.
The Pioneer signs were there, and so were the Syngentas.
Yeah, well, like BT cotton is a U.S. phenomenon, probably 5 years old, and China's got it. I mean, seems like the agricultural technology is moving across borders faster than ever.
Yeah.
Which, you're right, it's a scary deal. And I tell you, the one that really bothers me is the Ukraine. I think they got the ability to swamp the wheat market.
I think they do. I think if they can get the varieties in, they could probably swamp the wheat market.
Yeah.
The varieties that I saw, I was there during harvest, and they have a long way to go. If they get taught how to produce wheat properly,
yep.
Because they already know how to. I mean, they already have everything that they need to transport it with. Although it's a little, it's not the best in the world. They can store it.
How was the soil type?
It was like looking at Illinois.
Was that good?
Yeah.
Wow.
I am not kidding. I was in Poltava, and then. And Poltava's the agricultural region, or one of the heavier ones. But that soil, it was black, it was deep, and the only thing that was missing from the landscape were farmhouses, because they all live in town,
yeah.
and on the collectives.
Yeah.
But if you didn't know, I can send you a photo. I could send you a photo, and you would know. Because there's a pioneer. If you looked hard enough, you'd realize that the Pioneer was in Cerulic, or the number was. But there's a blacktop there, and a ditch, and a Pioneer demonstration plot, and you'd swear you were in Illinois. And as far as I could tell, they have the flora, the weed spectrum's pretty close to the same. The depths of the soil is deep. It's like Illinois, except you transplanted it to Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
So it's drier and cooler, but it sure seems like, you know, Minnesota doesn't do too bad at raising corn. So,
well, just look at the EU. It averages on a normal year, it averages 100 bushels an acre. Average. It's astounding.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, I notice down here in the Delta, some of these people are hitting 80 and 90 bushels. One dog-ass farm 2 years ago when I had wheat, and I did average 81. And
mm-hmm.
I've got some customers in the Boot Hill, Missouri, and in Kentucky across the river that averaged 100 bushels on big acreage. It's astounding. So, yeah, that's what bothers me about it. And you think about the Ukraine before World War One, before communism came in, they were the world's largest exporters, were they not?
Yeah, they were. And I think they're not very far away from doing it again. There are a couple of things that could hold it back. One of them is already in place. Everybody was given land there, so it's hard. I mean, when you've got 10-acre plots, you might have 1,000 different people that you have as to cash rent from.
Yeah.
And they cannot sell their property at this point.
Yeah.
Now, in my opinion, is a really good idea that the government put that in place. Otherwise, there'd be, you know, so much outside investment that they would go from a collective farm state to they'd become a state that was owned by Monsanto and Louis Dreyfus.
It'd be like Brazil, probably.
ADM, yeah, they'd be really big, and I don't know. Well, but. Brazil still has smaller owners. Well, they have large farms, but I think they're not owned by companies all the time. But I think that Ukraine would really be a corporate state. They'd go from collective state to corporate state. And for democratic values, I don't think it that wouldn't serve the purposes of the United States.
Yeah, I see where you're going.
In fact, I'm sure that that wouldn't serve our purposes because, you know, in order to put democracy really into place, people have to own something.
Yeah, they have to have individual initiative.
Yeah.
And you don't get it if you're a paid employee of Maggi in Brazil or somebody like that.
That's correct. And that's why, and you can see it in Ukraine. It's going to take a long time for the Ukrainians even to get hold of this idea. And I think this is why democracy doesn't get around the world sometimes. You know, you can go into a nation like Iraq or anywhere with a lot of force and try to plant democracy there. But how did we do it here? Well, it's pretty simple. We had, you know, we gave away property, you know, 160 acres at a time.
Yeah, that's right. That's an interesting comment on Russia. It makes a lot of sense. But, you know, I could see the world wheat crop being up 50 million tons.
Well, I still think they can do it. What I'm saying is it might take longer than you expect, depending on how they're able to privatize property. How successful?
Tell me about China. That's interesting on hybrids, on their corn.
Oh, China and corn?
Yeah. I mean, you saw them with first-world hybrids?
I have not been. No, that was in Ukraine.
Oh.
I have not been into China.
Oh, I thought you said you had.
No, I have not been into China. And I don't have experience with talking to anybody to see what they do, although I think they do plant. I think they plant first-world hybrids there. For corn, but I'm not certain that's the case.
Well, the reason I bring it up, I was reading something on Ag Resources the other day, and they were talking about China, and they said that their yields have been going up, but they're still using single gene something, and they had not yet gotten into.
They're using open pollinated.
I'm not a good farmer to tell you that. it wasn't first world technology, but
okay.
They were coming to it.
Maybe they're
And gosh knows when you go, it would. They've gone from like 98 bushels an acre to like 113. Well,
yeah, I think single gene hybrids. Yeah, let's see.
That's probably
I'd have to
where
think about
are.
That. Yeah, they're not using double crosses.
That's why. Yeah, that was the deal. Well, I can assure you that they have gone from backward technology to the best technology in the world in cotton in about 3 years' time. It's unbelievable. I mean, they have stolen Monsanto's BT cotton, copied it, done everything known to man with it. So I wonder if something happens along that line. Another thing that bothers me, obviously I'm a bull on corn, but world population is you've got all of Europe, Japan, and China at slightly negative population growth as we speak, which people don't really think about.
Yeah. You know, world population growth is slowing.
With no question. The only place that's really growing is the U.S., and that's immigration. But it's fascinating markets.
That's interesting. World population growing, and you're only thinking about those who can afford to buy food.
Yeah.
but for the marketplace, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I've got a buddy in southern Illinois said some farmland just sold for $5,000 an acre in his county, which I just thought was unbelievable.
Which county is he in?
He's in Keysport, if you know Lake Carlisle. I don't know which county that is, but it's just south of Springfield.
Yeah, that'd be pretty decent property. We would consider that just the top edge of southern Illinois.
Yeah. It's not super farmland. It probably has the same yields per acre as we have down here in our farmland. It's 1,000 to 1,500.
Yeah.
We just live in a different world.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I was wondering what farmland prices will do because they've been between that $4,000 and $5,000 acre for the last year. And actually a year and a half, maybe 2 years. And it'll be interesting to see with 350 corn.
It's got to help.
Yeah. How high will they go? And if what happens? I mean, they can't at this point. If you buy the acreage, you can't actually even make it. You can't make it pencil at $5,000 an acre. Not on its own anyway.
No way. And you know, another thing it gets me. Everybody tells me that you can do corn for 250 or whatever they can do it for, and that's just bullshit. I'm paying the bills, And it's going to cost me $400 to raise irrigated corn this year, and I got $60, admittedly, I've got $60 an acre in custom haul and custom combine. I don't own a combine. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But if you own a combine, you're paying for it another way. I've been through the numbers on that side, and I think it's a push to own or a push to custom. And then we're in large farm tracts, so maybe we got, instead of me running the combine, I've got an employee running, so maybe I got $30 an acre more than they got in labor. But everything else is cut and dried. I'm paying the same thing for seed they are, everything else. And I just wonder where everybody comes up with all these fantastically low cost of production numbers.
I don't know.
I mean, I just think they're bullshitting themselves because it's impossible. I mean, I write checks on every one of them. And y'all got a different setup because you've got smaller tracts of land and you've got more family farm type routine where we have these great big tracts of land and employees. So it's,
hey, I have a question on that too. Since we talk about this on policy side a lot, are you fearful and are your neighbors, the guys that are in the cotton side, there aren't very many of you.
No.
Are you fearful all of that's going away?
Yes. I am, because let's face it, cotton and rice farmers have gotten much, much more government payments than corn and bean and wheat have by a whopping amount. Yes. And
do you think there's any way that it's not going away?
I don't know. You know, every time they have a new farm bill, they always talk about they're going to cut agricultural subsidies, which are all of what, about $18 billion out of a $2,600 million
yeah.
budget. It's not even a rounding.
Well, they just reapportion it to different places. The numbers keep going up.
Yeah, I mean, but think of it. I mean, all they're spending on all these support programs is less than $20 billion out of $2,600 billion spent.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what, a third of 1%? Or it's not even that. It's just nothing. So I don't know. But, I mean, it does look like they got the bullseye on us down here because we've had a stronger agricultural lobby, I guess, than you guys have for some reason or other, which I have no idea.
Well, the other thing about that, and the way it was explained to me, is that the cotton subsidies go through more than just the farm. So we have, in corn, for instance, is the best example. You've got the ethanol industry with its taxes, a tax rebates and then corn subsidies, but the cotton subsidies apparently go from all the way to the merchandiser. Is that right? So that everybody's getting a piece of the dollar all the way along the.
Well, there were they had a step two program where they would, if our U.S. price was less than the world price by some number, they would give the merchant 4 or 5 cents a pound, and then supposedly he passed that on to the mill and the exporter and made our cotton competitive, and it did work to some extent that way, but it still was an awful lot of money that was getting doled out. And the U.S. textile industry now is operating on basically we'll get none of that this year, where last year it might have averaged 3 or 4 cents, and as a result, the U.S. textile industry is almost going away.
Mm-hmm.
5 years ago, we were 10 million bales, and now we're 5 million bales.
Speaking of industries going away, when NAFTA comes into play on the sugar industry next year, and Mexico sugar is allowed to come into the country, two questions.
Louisiana.
Yeah. What happens to the sugar growers? This isn't that big a deal anymore, especially with ethanol picking up the slack. But, and does Coca-Cola decide to use sugar again rather than fructose?
I would think they'll go back to sugar because instead of paying 21, 22 domestic prices, they'll be paying world sugar prices, which will be, you know, 12, 13, something like that. So, yeah, and fructose going higher and sugar going lower, that would certainly be the deal. I've got a farm I had just sold it in South Louisiana. But we were on the northern edge of sugarcane country, and we had a little bit of it around us, and, man, the sugar growers scared to death. You know, they know if they cut the price from 21-cent guarantee back down to world prices, they're out of business.
Well, they're done unless they do something.
They're done.
I mean, officially they're done. Because NAFTA, that comes into play. It's not going to come into play. That's written into the NAFTA agreement. So their protection is gone.
Well, if they go, you know, if they take the support price away from them, then they're cooked.
Well, I take that back. Their support price is still there, but my understanding is that one way or the other, when they open up, they'll have to open up the farm bill because it will simply cost too much to support them in the face of a world sugar price.
Yeah. Well, then they're all vitally aware of it. And they've been going through that process with every farm bill for the last two or three of them. And this one, you know, looks like it may be more. And it's a real source of concern. If you go to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and head south, 98% of the land's in sugarcane. Every single acre. Just wall-to-wall sugarcane.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to have to take... And what's the growing season for that? I've got to take a trip through there.
Well, you know...
When it's up and... When's it up and just before harvest or...
Well, it's harvested in the fall, and you plant it in the first year, you can't harvest it. In the second year, you can harvest some, and then third year, fourth and fifth, and then you replant and all that routine. But it's interesting. Yeah, you'd enjoy looking at it. It's great big tall stuff. Gee whiz. It's about 12, 13 feet tall.
I'll never forget, because we don't see it. I mean, I took the kids to Disney several years ago, and we drove all night, and we were, I don't know, 10 or 20 miles off the Florida border in Georgia and stopped, and it was about 6 a.m. in the morning, and I hauled the kids out because there was a cotton field there.
Oh, you've never seen one?
Well, not really, and I knew the kids hadn't seen one. And,
you know,
I hadn't seen a cotton field either, and this one had the balls on it. It was ready. It was not far from harvest, I don't think. So.
It's beautiful when it's right before, the day before they pick it. It's just a snow white.
That's what it was. It was just really gorgeous crop.
It's real pretty, and it's pretty when it's blooming. They call it poor man's orchids when it's in the middle of the summer and it's in full bloom. The flowers look like an orchid almost.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful stuff, but, we're in trouble. I mean, think of the idea that I think it's not improbable if corn stays here and cotton exports are a disaster right now. It's not improbable that we could lose half the Delta's 4 million acres of cotton. That's a lot of cotton to lose. It'd be a huge blow to us.
That would be a huge blow to the whole economy.
Yeah. Well, it really wouldn't be because we're at the $3.50 corn, we're making a lot of money.
Oh, so you'd be replacing it with corn. I'm not thinking.
No, I mean, we just lose,
But and the textile industry is gone for all intents and purposes?
Yeah, it's gone from, 10 million a few years ago to 5 and goes lower every year.
So there's not really an economic incentive to, quote, save cotton because it'll save jobs.
No, but if you cut the U.S. cotton crop, we're the world's gun in the export market. I think we do damn near 50% of all bales export if we cut our crop. China's going to feel it that way. Because they're the big importers of it.
And actually, since we borrow so much money from them, we could actually decide to protect that in some form.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. It's quite an interesting set of circumstances. Well, it's the least pleasant that farmers now have several crops to pick from, and they all make good money.
Yes, indeed. Hey, John, it was good to talk to you.
Okay, Todd, I enjoyed talking with you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.